This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Beat me up on the mamas of all mama shit.
Hey, I'm looking through my telescope and I see a mothership. Is that you? Beam me up.
Hey, DA, I'm thirsty, man. Can you beam me up for a cold one?
Hey, DA, what's going on, baby? Stop me off and beam me up.
DA, what's the dealio? Permission to get in that mothership.
Is my window seat still available? Beam me up.
What's going on, DA? Hey, man, I need you to do me a huge favor. My coworker's a jerk. Oh, just beam me up, man.
Get beamed up. Everyone else has. It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
And we come to you live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studios. They found a better way to mortgage so that you could focus on making your new house your home. Rocket Mortgage. Push button, get mortgage. Coming up this hour on the show, I've got my champ and my chump. Also, we've got Tara Sullivan, Boston Globe NFL reporter on the Patriots and what they do coming off that loss against the Baltimore Ravens on Sunday night. Interesting to kind of note that the Pats rarely, if ever, get blown out. And in that game, they lost by 17 points to the Ravens on Sunday. However, it did happen twice last season. They got blown out by the Titans and blown out by the Lions of all teams. But those two teams also had coaching matchups that knew, very familiar with the Patriots in Mike Vrabel and Matt Patricia. And I think that might be one of the things of why Bill Belichick is so secretive about the secret sauce of the Patriots and why so many assistant coaches do not simply create the next Patriots organization. Number one, they don't have Tom Brady. But number two is that Belichick has never wanted his former assistants to come back and beat him. And so few of those guys have those internal secrets, if you will, because he keeps so many things close to the vest, even from his assistant coaches. Our next guest is a member of the CBS Sports Network, and there is a lot to talk about ahead of this weekend. LSU and Alabama, 3:30 Eastern time, kickoff on CBS, and both those teams land in the top four of the recent college football playoff rankings, the first ones that came out last night. Joining us here on the show is our friend and former college football coach, Houston Nutt. Coach, good morning. How you doing?
Doing great. How you doing?
Doing great. Always fun to catch up with you. Let's start with Clemson. A lot of people think they have the biggest gripe. Do you think the Tigers were disrespected by this college football playoff committee last night?
I was a little surprised that they weren't in there, but really, when you look at it, they're just fine. You're going to... If you take care of business, you're going to be right there at the end of the time when they really decide who the four best teams are. They'll be right there if they just keep doing what they've been doing.
Now, Clemson has more wins over better teams than Alabama. Many people would say they have a better resume than Alabama, but Alabama ranked number three, Clemson number five. Do you think that comes down to the fact that Clemson had that tight win against North Carolina?
It probably does. It probably does. And I think also when you look at, I keep hearing them say, the look, the eye test and all that. When you look at these four receivers and a healthy Tua Tagovailoa, boy, they've been very, very hard to stop. They've been something to watch. So I think that and then what you mentioned about the close game with North Carolina. But I still think, though, Dabo's going to use this in a very positive way with his team, and it's the same old thing. Hey, they don't respect us right now, but that's okay. We'll keep winning, win the ACC championship, and we'll be right there.
Houston Nutt joins us, CBS Sports Network. Ohio State and LSU, 1 and 2. I don't think you go wrong either way. I think I would have had LSU at number one.
Yeah.
Who do you think would have been number one if you put out the ranking?
Well, I'm like you. I would have put LSU one because of the wins against Florida, Auburn. I think that's big. And I like the way, of course, Joe Burrow is playing, and he's been quite a story and a great leader. I just think I'd put them there. But, again, I understand Ohio State's playing very fast right now. They got a lot of confidence. Chase Young on the defensive side, he's been so disruptive. I get it. But I like the wins that LSU has done, and can't wait for this game this week.
How do you think Tua's ankle injury affects this matchup against LSU?
Well, he needs to be able to move. That's the thing. I expect him to play. I don't know. Not there. Hadn't watched him. Don't know any inside. But I expect him to be ready to go. But he needs to be able to move. That's one of the things that he does so well is when something does break down, he can move, extend the play a little bit. And those four receivers have created so much separation. They have four great, great receivers. And so he needs to be able to move. And again, I don't know if he's – of course, it always helps if you're 100%. But, again, I don't know. I've never heard of this type of surgery during the year. And to have an off week was good timing. So I expect him to play.
Houston Nutt joining us, CBS Sports Network college football analyst, LSU and Bama this weekend, 3:30 on CBS. This one's in Tuscaloosa. How much does that alter what your expectation is of Alabama versus if this was played at Baton Rouge at Tiger Stadium?
Well, it's a tremendous advantage for Alabama when you have a home field. Both these teams, if you go to their home, if you go to LSU, you might as well give them 7 points. You go to Alabama, probably give them 7 points. That's what home field advantage does, and I believe that with these two great teams and two great fan bases. But saying all that, LSU is on a real mission. They really look in sync, and they look so much different on offense than what we're accustomed to seeing. And so I think both the defenses are probably not as good as in years past, but they're still very good, and it's going to come down to these two quarterbacks.
What do you think about the loss of LSU linebacker Michael Divinity? He led the team in sacks. He has left now the team for personal reasons. So LSU was down their best pass rusher going into a game at Tuscaloosa. How do you think that affects LSU going into the game?
Well, I think it hurts them. I think it hurts them just because of the things that you reeled off. You know, it's hard to replace a guy that's leading your team in certain categories. And those guys are hard to find. And I think it definitely hurts, just like Dylan Moses when he went down for Alabama. That hurt Alabama in a big way. So I think this hurts LSU. I really do.
Let's look at the Final Four, or right now the top four again. Penn State gets that number four slot of the college football playoff rankings. Do you think Penn State can pull off an upset against Ohio State when they play in a couple of weeks?
I think it can happen. I do. I think it can happen. These are two good football teams, and again, who takes care of the ball the best? Who makes the plays, especially on third down? Who's going to execute? But that's why you play them. But you don't ever know. But both these teams are so good. But Sean Clifford and KJ Hamler, boy, these guys have been playmakers. They've been so consistent. They're fun to watch, and they have the ability to make things happen.
Oklahoma looked like they were flying high until they crashed against Kansas State a couple of weeks ago, and their defense allowed 48 points to the Wildcats. Clearly the committee is looking at that and said, well, we weren't quite believing in you, because that dropped them, that one loss, all the way to number 9. That is the lowest ranked one loss team. What did that game tell you, and do you think the committee got it right dropping OU all the way to number 9?
Yeah, I think they did. I think the Big 12's in trouble when you just look at the landscape now, this poll, and where everybody's placed. I think they're in big trouble. When you get dropped that far and you look at the teams that are still undefeated, man, I don't know. Oklahoma's going to need some help. I'll just say that. They're going to need some help, and they got to finish out the right way.
Finally, Pac-12, Oregon 7 and Utah 8. They're both 8-1. They could match up in the Pac-12 title game. Who do you think is a better team right now?
I would go Oregon because of Justin Herbert and then how fast they're playing on defense. Utah, I got a lot of respect for them. They're physical. They're tough, disruptive. But the quarterback play of Justin Herbert right now, to me, is just out of sight. I think he's so good and very accurate and a good leader. And I think he's a guy to me that he's the difference maker.
Houston Nutt, former college football coach, a member of the CBS Sports Network. He's college football studio analyst, and this Saturday can be seen on the college football halftime show on the CBS Sports Network as LSU and Bama's at 3:30 Eastern time on CBS. CBS Sports Network, UConn and Cincinnati, Saturday at 3:30 the same time. Utah State, Fresno State, the late kick at 7 p.m. Coach, it's always good to catch up, man. Thanks so much. Enjoy the football this weekend.
You bet. Thanks for having me.
You got it. Houston Nutt joining us this morning on the show. Here's what I don't get about the rankings. I didn't have any problems necessarily. I don't normally have problems with the college football playoff rankings because it is a made-for-television event. And as I mentioned an hour ago, I think it's very... It was for a reason that they put Ohio State and Penn State in the top four and LSU and Alabama in the top four because they know two of those four teams will suffer a loss. They play one another. And so they know at the moment either LSU or Bama or Ohio State and Penn State, two of those teams are going to drop out of the top four after the loss. And so they realize that's their chance to do some jumbling and some juggling. But my one thing that I didn't understand, I can understand all of it for the most part, except where they place Kansas State. And here's why. They dropped Oklahoma to number 9 because of the loss to K-State, right? They were undefeated, flying high, best of the Big 12. And most people said, okay, SEC winner, Big 10 winner, Clemson, and then Oklahoma, assuming they win the Big 12. They dropped Oklahoma all the way to number 9, the worst of the one-loss teams. Dropped them below both Pac-12 teams and Georgia. But they pushed Kansas State to number 16. So what the committee is saying is, Oklahoma, terrible loss. You can't have that loss. You're the worst one-loss team. But the worst one loss out of these teams, quote-unquote, is ranked 16th in this poll. That's kind of crazy. Now, Oregon's one loss, and this is why I would have said I would put Oregon at 4 or 5. They put them at 7. Was because Oregon's only loss is to the team that's number 11 in the opening college football playoff rankings, Auburn. Oregon led the number 11 team in the rankings up until the very end, then lost, and they're number 7? I don't like that. I don't get that. Because if this is just about this year, then are they not factoring in Georgia's expectations after the last two seasons in this one? Because they ranked Georgia ahead of Oregon. But clearly Oregon's one loss against Auburn, number 11 in the playoff rankings, way better than Georgia's one loss against South Carolina. But to me, the committee basically said, yeah, you know what? We think the Big 12 is overrated. We don't think Oklahoma's that good, and you can't lose to K-State. But they've rewarded K-State by pushing them all the way to number 16. So which one is it? Was that a bad loss for Oklahoma? Or was it a not-so-bad loss, actually? Because K-State's not that bad. Actually, pretty good. When we come back here on the show, I've got my champ and my chump. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Are the glitch in the simulation.
Hey, good morning, DA. Big fan of yours. I'm a big football fan. I love tailgating. Great how you can drink alcohol in the morning. Otherwise, people are always saying, hey, Chris, what are you running away from? And I'm like, no, I'm just tailgating.
DA on CBS Sports Radio.
Makes sense. Sunday, the NFL on CBS features the Chiefs taking on the Titans or an NFC encounter between the Lions and Bears. All beginning with JB and the guys on the NFL Today. Noon Eastern, 9 Pacific, only on CBS. The DA Show each and every day, 9 until noon Eastern time, 6 until 9 Pacific. And you can also get us on demand. Listen to us in podcast form if you miss anything or want to hear it again. Just simply go to iTunes, radio.com or other places podcasts are available. Search The DA Show, and you'll find us full episodes each and every day. We've got Tara Sullivan in studio coming up here in just a few minutes from now. NFL reporter from the Boston Globe will talk to her about what she saw in Baltimore as the Ravens beat the Patriots 37-20 and how both those teams will respond moving forward. Next hour, Herman Moore is going to join us, four-time Pro Bowler, one of the most productive wide receivers in the NFL in the 1990s during his era. We've been talking about the college football playoff rankings and what to take away from them from last night. That's the first one of the season. And I think when you look at it, you have to remember that there is a part of this that is very obviously about the show. And it's about building interest in college football. And for that, I actually think it's brilliant. Nathan tweets, DA, you get it. The college football playoff rankings are a hype train, a big commercial for a huge entertainment business called college football. Well, even more than that, this is not just about college football, although in a larger scope it is. The playoff rankings are for ESPN because ESPN holds the television rights to the playoff, the three playoff games. And in this way, I actually think it's brilliant. I hammer Major League Baseball's lack of ability to hype its product. It misses the mark constantly. And I'm a baseball fan. And baseball puts out its next schedule for next year during the previous season. Could you imagine if this week we got next year's NFL schedule? How ridiculous that would be. Imagine if this week we found out what Sunday night football was for week four of next year. This is what baseball does. It's totally insane. Basically, the NFL has taken on Bilotti's scheduling technique. Get ahead of it by years. Years. Major League Baseball took a page out of Pete the Body Bilotti scheduling.
It makes for an interesting outcome.
So, baseball doesn't know how to do this, and college football is actually doing this really well. It is disguised as an assessment of the sport. Oh, these are where the team should be ranked. This is who's better than this team. This is a power ranking of the resumes of these football teams. And so it creates importance, it assigns importance, a numeric value to all of the football teams playing. But ultimately, all this is a weekly show to hype up until ESPN's three football games. I mean, let's face it, we don't need this. At the end of the regular season, after the conference championship games, the playoff committee could simply announce the four teams getting in. But that wouldn't build debate. It wouldn't build hype. It wouldn't build speculation and what ifs. When do they do it? Tuesday nights. Why? It's not against Monday Night Football. They don't do it on Sundays where nobody's going to even notice. They do it on Tuesday nights, late in the season, so that we talk about it on Wednesday, all day on Wednesday, after Monday Night Football is done and clear, and we have a couple days before the next NFL weekend. Hugely smart. If I was in that marketing room for ESPN and brokering this deal for college football, I would have suggested all of this. Guys, made for television show every week on ESPN to promote ESPN games, and we cloak it as the rankings, but ultimately we know, because of the human element, we're not beholden to computers or metrics. We get to just move whatever we want, wherever we want. Now, I'm not sitting here saying that they don't believe some of this or most of this or all of this, but they know all this is a timed event to start ringing the bell. We are Pavlov's dogs. Ding, 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 ding. Clemson's need to be in the top four. LSU, Alabama, 2-3. Remember that commercial, Snossages, where dogs were chasing would-be dog treats that tasted like sausages?
and all you hear is the dog thinking, snossages, 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 snossages. That is what the college football playoff rankings are. Snossages, snossages, snossages. We just want to get to the games. And this is just a little drip of it. Oh, this is who could be playing. I don't know, but we reserve the right to change this next week. But this is who might be playing. Oh, but we reserve the right. And we don't have to tell you why it might change. Let's get to your champ and your chump.
Only one letter separates them, but they're galaxies apart. One is a true winner. One is a pathetic loser. This is DA's champ or chump.
Your champ is Ohio State defensive dynamo Chase Young, because in a year where we've been talking about the quarterbacks for more than a year, Tua Tagovailoa, Justin Herbert, Jacob Fromm, who is going to be number one? Where will these franchise quarterbacks go? Tank for Tua. People want Herbert. People want Fromm. These are franchise-altering quarterbacks coming into the year. We've been talking about these guys for a calendar year. Chase Young has zoomed up boards to snatch all of the hype. Tua hasn't really beaten anybody. Now he's injured. Herbert's looked very good at times not so great. Fromm has had some awful moments. Trevor Lawrence has looked underwhelming at times this year. And so the quarterbacks that were supposed to be everything this season, everything, have now turned to Chase Young. I mean, even think about Oklahoma, where we have pegged Heisman quarterback, quarterback Heisman, and Jalen Hurts has been amazing at Oklahoma, but a terrible loss against K-State, Chase Young. And he has been so thoroughly dominant. He is very Myles Garrett-esque, where Myles Garrett was so good as a pass rusher that even though there were all these really good quarterbacks, Patrick Mahomes, Deshaun Watson, lesser extent Mitchell Trubisky, he went number one. That's going to happen this year probably as well. Young is making it happen in the biggest games, and I can't wait to see what happens when Chase Young takes on Penn State, because that right now is Ohio State season, and then he'll get a shot at Michigan as well, and we'll see what he does in the Big Ten championship game should Ohio State get that far.
That's DA's champ.
Your chumps, my beloved Syracuse Orange. This has been, in my estimation, the biggest collapse out of any college football team this year. They were a preseason top 25 team. Syracuse came off a 10-win season last year. 10 wins. They played the defending net. They played the national champions very close last year on the road in Clemson. They lost to only Clemson, Notre Dame. They had really good losses. 10 wins. Arrow pointed up. Top 25 preseason for the first time in more than 15 years. And they might finish the year without an FBS win. After getting throttled by Boston College 58-27 at home. They will play at Duke, at Louisville, home to Wake to finish up the season. If they lose those three games, and all three they'll be underdogs, they will finish 3-9, going from a top 25 team to 3-9, and their only wins coming over Liberty, Holy Cross, and Western Michigan. There is no bigger collapse than that, and there's a lot of reasons for it. The offensive line has been dreck. The defense has been scattershot. The quarterback's been underwhelming in Tommy DeVito. The offense hasn't gotten on track. At the very least, you could count on Dino Babers' first two seasons. They lose, but they lose 55-48. Now, they're losing 35-17. They're losing 16-10 to NC State, who's also the dregs of the ACC. And in the ACC, I mean, look at their losses. They gave up 63 to Maryland. Maryland! They're not even in the ACC anymore. They lost to NC State. They lost to Pitt. They lost to Florida State. They lost to Boston College. These are all winnable games. They've lost them all. And they'll probably lose either all of the next three or at least two of the next three, which means they're going to be a 3 or 4 win team after coming off a 10-win season. Sorry, but they got to be the chumps.
That's DA's chump.
Class is now dismissed.
I'm nothing if not honest. When we come back, the Patriots losing 37-20 on Sunday night against the Baltimore Ravens. What to take away from that one for the Patriots? We'll talk to Tara Sullivan, who was there, NFL reporter for the Boston Globe, in studio next. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Little wet, little drippy, 24/7.
Damon, I love you, and I love everything you do. You're progressive. You didn't threaten me. You're the new age. You're what's next, baby.
It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
I pride myself on not threatening anybody. 40 minutes past the hour. DA with you here on CBS Sports Radio. Our toll-free line, 855-212-4227, brought to you by GEICO. Everyone, quick way you could save money switching to GEICO. Homeowners, renters, motorcycle insurance, too. Get it all, GEICO.com. And remember, you can watch the best of the show on YouTube. Just search CBS Sports Radio or The DA Show, and you'll find the best of video clips every single day on YouTube. Trevor in Bomb City reminds me, DA, Western Michigan is an FBS team. Ah, that's right. I said Syracuse might go the entire season without an FBS win. I meant a Power 5 win. Right now, Liberty, Holy Cross, and Western Michigan, the only victories for a preseason top 25 team. Yikes. On Sunday night in Baltimore, Lamar Jackson and company had themselves a night, and the Patriots were handed their first loss of the season. Just how good are the Ravens, and where do the Patriots go from here? Probably deep into the playoffs. Joining us here on the show in studio is Tara Sullivan from the Boston Globe, sports columnist. Tara, good morning. How you doing?
Good morning. I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing great.
Thanks for having me here.
How surprised were you, having seen this Patriots team dominate all season long, that not only did they lose, because that was understandable, but losing by 17?
Surprise is a good word, I think a fair word, just because you have to judge what you see up to that point, right? And up to that point, I get it, the schedule was relatively and comparatively weak, but up to that point, they had handled everybody pretty much with ease. So surprise is a fair word. What was truly shocking to me was just how poorly they came out of the gate. And I get it. Facing Lamar is so different than anything else. And maybe there is just an adjustment period on the field to kind of catch up to his speed and the speed at which that offense moves. But my goodness, that first quarter, even before I worked at the Globe, I don't remember seeing, you know, a Tom Brady offensive team and a defense that was supposed to be that good just get blown off the field for that quarter.
Do you think that that's because Lamar Jackson is that difficult of a matchup right now for everybody, or did he do something against the Patriots that maybe the Patriots just simply can't handle?
Yes and yes. I mean, I know that's the cop-out, I guess. He is that much of a matchup problem. He certainly is, and it was interesting even during the week, Patriots defenders acknowledging Greg Roman, their offensive coordinator, had success before because he had Colin Kaepernick, you know, that they've had trouble with that type of offense before. Players did talk about a few new wrinkles. You know, the Ravens had come off a bye week, so they certainly had time to tinker, and I think Harbaugh knows how to tinker. There's no doubt about that. And he looked for a few different ways. Some of the pistol formations you saw, maybe they hadn't seen as much or were a little harder to defend. But, it was surprising.
We don't normally see the Patriots lose big, although last year it did happen twice. We were talking about that earlier in the show. They lost against Detroit big, and they lost against the Titans big. But those two games happened against former, basically, Patriots disciples, Matt Patricia and Mike Vrabel. Do you think there's a trend there that the Patriots losing big is a sign that maybe they're not as dominant as they used to be against really good opponents, or just specifically bad matchups because of the familiarity with the Pats?
Going back to last year, the Detroit game was a real downer that I remember. There's certainly a small element of that. It didn't work against the Dolphins. I mean, you have to have personnel, right? You got to have personnel to be able to make it work. But certainly there's some familiarity, guys who have been in their system before. The Patriots, I think this year's is clearly an indication that they were able to really feast off bad teams. I mean, when you think about who the Patriots had beaten along the way, the Jets twice and the Redskins and the Giants and just not good teams. Even the Bills, for all their good, their offense is not great, and their offense really struggled against New England. So to me, it's not an indication that they're losing anything big. You know, the Patriots, they kind of chug along this way. They even take that bad loss early, and they always turn it into something you know, they get home field advantage. The AFC East stinks, and they end up, you know, and they end up kind of using that game, I think, to propel them forward. It's actually sort of my favorite time to watch a Belichick after a loss. I'm always fascinated by what he does, you know, how the master goes back to the lab and what he comes out with for the next couple weeks.
Yeah, Tara Sullivan joins us from the Boston Globe. All right, so how much stock do you put in the idea that Tom Brady thinks about leaving after the season?
I think it's an element this year, more so than ever before, and I think little things. You've seen the reports and, you know, Adam Schefter pointing out important things about putting a house on the market and his trainer putting a house on the market. And we all know that Brady has been honest about his wife, you know, that Giselle would have him retire any day, and that his kids are getting older, and he talks about that. He's obviously getting older, although when you look at the side-by-side pictures from even 10 years ago.
That's scary.
It's scary, okay? Right? It's not just me.
We all age. And somehow Tom Brady, side-by-side.
There's a picture in the attic somewhere. Yeah, I don't know.
Looks like he is 25 years old.
And the thing is, if he walks down the street, but I know people see him on TV, and there's flak jackets and pads and everything, and it's hard to really gauge, you know, what a guy looks like. We know the eating habits and everything is healthier, but literally if he walked by you on the street, you would not think that's a pro athlete who just walked by you. He looks young, slim, skinny. It's amazing. So
he doesn't have any wrinkles. Okay.
I know.
He's in his early 40s. All of us have wrinkles once you hit your early 40s. I don't know if it's injections he's doing, collagen.
I don't know.
A face tuck, but it seems impossible that at 42...
He looks younger than he did at 22.
He's got that crease on his face.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. But all of that, you know, we can wonder and ask how he does it. But I can't help but think, we know the contract situation is different this year. Like, I just can't help but think, if it is in his mind, because I feel like we've even heard more from him that betrays the frustration with this particular offense, right? He doesn't have great weapons around him. We know Gronk retired, and all the attempts they've made at wide receiver, you know, going back to the craziness of Antonio Brown and Josh Gordon, you know, just different guys coming through now making a trade for Sanu, and, you know, that they're trying to find weapons for him. And you can see, you hear it from him more than I have anyway in recent memory, that you can just tell there's a frustration. And part of me wonders if that's because he feels like, what if this is my last shot? I really want to win one more. And if I'm even thinking about going out, I got to pull the, you know, I got to drag these guys with me.
Tara Sullivan joins us from the Boston Globe. I agree. I think that there's an element of anxiousness that is around Tom Brady this year that maybe hasn't been.
Now he's from him, you think, or even the people around him?
From him.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah,
he's battled that organization before for every dollar, and they've usually shortchanged him.
Yeah.
And they've usually made him take a little bit less and convinced him to do so. So that's always been
an element. And I think he's reaped the benefit. Like, I think he does know. He knows what he did. Listen, not many NFL quarterbacks have a wife who makes more than they do, right? I mean, he is a unique situation where he is in life and where he is in football. And I think he's appreciated that. But you're right. That could take a toll, too. You know, by the time you get to the end of that race, you're like, enough already, or, yeah.
Yeah, and there's a little finality that's going on with Tom Brady. He knows it. I mean, he knows that he certainly doesn't play now like he did 5 years ago.
Right.
And he knows that next year he can't play like he did 5 years ago.
Right.
So there is a finality that is happening. I thought the Adam Schefter report was interesting from this standpoint. Schefter, as you know, being in the business, doesn't pull this out of nowhere.
Right.
He does not grab onto some type of conjecture and just
throw
it out there.
He's the definite, if there's smoke, there's fire. Like, there's no, you're right. There's nothing that just comes from, hey, what do you think of this idea? No, it's rooted in some reporting.
And he's not a hot take artist.
Right.
So
agreed.
Either he feels very strongly that Brady's thinking about this, or the Brady camp gave him the story to put out there, maybe to light the fire under the Patriots organization.
To get some extra weapons for this year, you think, maybe just... Yeah, any of those to me seem possible. Any of those seem plausible. It's interesting, and it's actually my colleague at the Globe, Chris Gasper, a fellow columnist, I thought made this great point that it's almost as if Brady and Belichick have shifted roles a little bit. Like, Belichick's usually the one who seems cranky and frustrated, whatever. And rather, this year, he's sort of more like enjoying the ride. Maybe it's having his son on staff or whatever. But he seems a little bit more, I don't know, just let's appreciate every moment. Whereas, yeah, Brady, there's just, anxiousness is probably a good word on your part, because there just seems to be a little bit there.
A couple of years ago, Belichick said, I'm not going to coach into my 70s like Marv Levy. That became very famous because that became, okay, well, that's the end line for Belichick. Now he's kind of recanted. He was asked about this on WEEI a couple weeks ago. And he said, well, I didn't really know what 70 felt like, and now I'm kind of getting there. Do you think he has now opened up the door because he is chasing Don Shula's record right. to coach into his 70s? Do you think that's the case?
I think he does. I don't see any slowdown for me. And even it was Brady in a recent press conference when we were up there, you know, talked about Belichick's competitive fire, like that it's competitive energy. Like he still has the energy to want to go out, to compete, to do everything. There's no indication that he's lost any interest, any desire, any energy, any ability, you know, anything like that. So, no, I wouldn't be surprised at all if he just blows past what was maybe once a self-imposed deadline or what he thought might be. I don't see any. For him, I don't see the end in sight. And even, you know, he's had guys turn over on the staff, guys are going other places, and he keeps plugging along and finding new ones. And I do think having, you know, Steve Belichick is a big part of the staff now. He was the only guy really to come back on defense. And, you know, I'm speaking personally as a family person, like, I would think that's huge. And I do think he's enjoying that a lot. And maybe there's no rush then, you know, to move along if I get to come to work every day and my son's, and I'm teaching him, you know, and we're working together. I think he's enjoying it as much as ever.
Tara Sullivan joins us from the Boston Globe. Do you think there's any element of Belichick that wants to outlast Brady to prove that I didn't only need Brady to win?
It's such a good question. Getting inside the mind of Belichick, man, it's a tough
one. Somewhat impossible.
Yeah. But of course, I mean, any coach is competitive that way. You know, they do. They value their own legacy in that regard. And gosh, if you could ever, you know, listen, the guy knows what he's doing in drafting quarterbacks, right? He's supplied. He's got Brissett out there and obviously has Garoppolo out there. And I think there was a point he was ready even back then with Garoppolo. I mean, he did not want to part ways with him. So I think he does absolutely believe he could be as successful with another quarterback. And maybe there's a little slice of him that says, hey, I'd love a chance to prove that. Anything. Yeah, I could see that.
I saw some criticism come out of Boston over the last week because they were so bad defensively on Sunday night and that Steve Belichick apparently is calling some of the plays defensively, that there might be some calls of, well, is this just nepotism? Is Steve Belichick really the right guy to be calling plays defensively if they're going to get run out of the building by Lamar Jackson? What do you think about that?
Well, it's such a loaded thing because, of course, we don't really know who's calling plays. And we can all surmise and have opinions. I'm still convinced this is Bill Belichick's defense. I don't think there's any question about that this year. We've seen him even enter the sideline huddle and yelling and exhorting guys. You know, he just seems a lot more involved in the defense. Listen, if you want to have a nepotism argument, I certainly wouldn't stop and start or start and stop in New England, right? I mean, the Grudens and the Shanahans, and, you know, it happens. Of course, it becomes a family business for these guys. I'll say this, and I've known some of the guys in that locker room who go back to their Rutgers days with Steve Belichick. They do love him. They love playing for him. They speak very highly of what it is he knows about football and how he prepares them. So, I mean, maybe that's because some of them do go back a long way, but that includes the likes of Stephon Gilmore, you know, who doesn't have that background, and they speak highly of him. I don't know. I feel like you could say, well, what are they going to say? You know, it's the coach's son. But I think they'd say nothing if they didn't want to say something. And the fact is they will offer up a lot of praise. So I don't buy it. I think everybody learns on the job. And, you know, it was a unique game Sunday night.
Final thing, since you cover all sports Boston, is Mookie Betts as good as gone now?
I sure hope not. What do you do? I mean, they say they can't keep all the payroll. J.D. Martinez is staying.
Martinez opted back in. He's going to make ton of money. And now
Mookie,
it looks like,
just judging by his conversations, you know, feels like he wants to test that market. So do you have to get something? I mean, I don't know. As Pete Abe, our baseball guy, wrote today, you know, I'd agree with what he was saying. Maybe try to move J.D. now, you know, move him in a trade. Somebody could take that contract and really work on trying to extend Mookie, you know, during this season, because what a shame that would be, I think.
What a
Boston
weird situation.
Fans.
I mean, Mookie Betts is one of the best players in baseball, one of the best all-around players in baseball.
Homegrown guy for them.
Homegrown guy. He's great defensively. He's great offensively. And everybody loves him.
Yeah.
I mean,
great.
Everybody loves him.
Yeah.
So to not want to keep that guy seems so crazy.
Yeah, and I just wonder if they think they're not going to be able to anyway. You know, Mookie does seem, he just seems interested in testing the market. And I'm sure they would rather lock him up first, you know, than have to bid on the open market. But yeah, it seems bizarre to me. Like, to me, you have to find a way to keep that guy. The Yankees kept Jeter. You know, I mean, I just think that you have to find a way to keep him. He's that good. He's that electric. And he's great in the community, too. I mean, the fans love him.
And it's not the Pirates or the you know, some team that doesn't have the payroll.
Big market World Series.
Why Red Sox now?
All those post World Series contracts to pitchers who couldn't even pitch last year. I mean, you have to find a way to keep Mookie Betts.
The Red Sox have wanted to spend money, they've been able to find ways to spend money.
This is true.
And now suddenly they can't find it for Mookie Betts. Very bizarre. Tara Sullivan joins us from the Boston Globe. Great stuff, Tara. Thanks so much for dropping on by.
Thank you. This was fun.
Yeah, this is a lot of fun. Tara Sullivan, Boston Globe, joining us this morning, talking about the Patriots after their loss against the Ravens. And we'll continue talking a little football and NFL coming up here after the break. The Chargers have angrily responded to the idea that they could be moving to London full time, and other members of the NFL have as well. Do we believe them? Also, Herman Moore, four-time Pro Bowl wide receiver for the Lions, is going to join us in hour number three. That's straight ahead. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.